Lamb mit The Secret of Letting Go. Das ist der Titeltrack der aktuellen 7. LP der Band, die eigentlich besteht aus Lou Rhodes und Andy Barlow. Das sind die beiden Hauptcharaktere in der Formation. Dieses Duo zieht sich immer wieder zurück, um gemeinsam an Alben zu arbeiten. Und jetzt ist eben die neue 7. LP erschienen. Auf der LP haben auch Bandmitglieder mitgewirkt. Und weil Lou Rhodes heute so ein bisschen Halsschmerzen hat, ist ein Mann aus der Kapelle als Vertretung quasi mit hier ins Studio gekommen. Und zwar John Thorne, der Basser. Andy Barlow und John Thorne sind jetzt also hier als Repräsentanten der Band Lamb. Und ich sage hello and welcome to Flux FM.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for having us.
John, Andy, how are you doing today?
Pretty good. We're all on a tour bus and I think we've done 12 shows now, and so everyone's starting to get like fighting off colds and flus and stuff. And but you know, morale is good, and the shows have been wonderful.
Touring in the fall, that's like the dangerous kind of part of
it's
it, right?
It's the dangerous bit.
There's colds.
I know, but then there's festivals in the summer.
Yeah,
and then
sure.
Other stuff to do in the spring. Yeah. It's like, yeah, this is the moment.
Well, you've done 12 shows on this tour right now, so you're. The danger of having a cold is there, but you're a well-oiled machine, I guess, for now, for this tour, for this part of the tour.
I mean, when we get on stage, we know what we're doing. And the songs have mutated into
cool.
These new versions of the songs that weren't like this 12 days ago at all. Like,
that's interesting.
Completely different, some of them.
Yeah, because I know that you and Lou, you're traveling. You've traveled to Goa this time to write for that record.
Mm-hmm.
You sometimes do that in your very studio,
mm-hmm.
but John contributed a little bit of singles here and there when you were recording the album,
mm-hmm.
and I was always wanted to know what happens with those songs when the band really gets to get their hands on them, you know, while touring, because I know that sometimes you work with strange tunings and stuff, so you have to change some of those songs for the live show, right?
Yeah, one of the most exciting things about the band from the very beginning has been that it's always very open live. So things immediately changed straight away. I mean, Andy mixes everything live for a start. Everything goes through his mixing desk.
Oh, wow.
And so it's open to certain amounts of improvisation and being in the moment and bouncing off each other and certain new things happening. So things do tend to morph over the course of a tour and sort of mutate into something new.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't even know that you're mixing it live as well on stage.
Mm-hmm.
That's an interesting process, I guess, because you must realize sometimes that, oh, when I turn the bass drum up a little more, the whole song is a different animal. Or, you know, you're a producer, you know that the loudness or the volume of the vocals kind of like tells the listener which genre you're listening to, right?
Sure.
So you change up those songs while mixing them as well.
Yeah, and, you know, I think, you know, obviously electronic music is a lot harder to kind of improvise with than you know, traditional instruments. So I think it's just kind of trying to get that sort of level of sort of flexibility and morphing that you can, you know, with more traditional conventional instruments.
Mm.
And I think the thing that's really marking this tour as different from before is there's quite a lot of songs which have got completely no computer input at all. Just playing it all live.
Because it's a bit more minimalistic. The new record is like
totally. Yeah.
Thinking back to the first one,
mm-hmm.
I think a little bit,
mm-hmm.
more minimalistic approach.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally.
And if someone fucks you up on tour, like really badly, you just turn down the signal for the rest of the tour. I've played the four string like for 60 minutes and I didn't hear anything. It was like, yeah, because you fucked me up 5 minutes before the show, John.
Dude, if I make a mistake, I play it twice just to pretend I meant it. I'm a jazz musician, that's why.
Yeah,
I
that's cool, jazzy. Yeah,
Just play it twice. Twice every minute.
I haven't made a single mistake on this tour yet, though. I just want to put that on record.
Okay,
yeah.
Interesting.
I thought you were going to say, in my life.
No, that's a different
one. Is it only from John's perspective, though? No, but as a jazzer, you should know. We've just established the fact that the record was at least partly written in India.
That's
and I've
right.
learned yep. that you're traveling there on a regular basis,
mm-hmm.
like every year for a few months. You
sure.
escape the winter,
yep.
which is kind of a brilliant idea.
Mm-hmm.
But how does one have to imagine the situation there? You have a house that you regularly go to, or because I've read about a group of friends that you have there already.
Yep. I've just found a new place, but I had the same house for 12 years. I think having somewhere that's established take, I think it took a few years to kind of get into it because there's so many distractions. There's sure. parties going on. There's the beach. There's a blah, blah, blah.
And it's a different culture.
And it's a different culture.
The moon is sitting upside down. Just learned about that.
And you want to explore and you want to, you know, there's just so much input, you know. But then at the same time, from about midday till about 5 PM, it's hot. It's yeah. hot, hot, hot. And you don't want to be on the beach and you don't want to be out. So I just kind of figured, I love kite surfing. So I just figured, all right, I'd go, you know, have the morning where it's cooler. And then from about midday till sunset, get in the studio. And then for sunset, go kite surfing. And then after that, you know, so just getting into a routine.
Yeah.
And then, because I'm a really driven person. And if I go for about more than about 2.5 weeks without creating something, yeah. I mean, like I become not a very nice person.
Yeah, yeah.
I have to feel like I'm being productive. Mm. So it was through kind of necessity, really. I was like, well, how can I miss this bleak weather in Europe?
Okay, cool.
and after a few years of doing it, yeah. I've kind of managed to, yeah.
Because this was the first time that you've written stuff there. I mean, or a bulk of the record there, because yeah. most of the times you were just sitting in the studio
exactly.
with Lou, right?
Exactly. And she was just like, no, it's not going to work, because uh-huh. I've been there a lot more than she has. And the first year she came, we didn't really do anything. But then she's like, okay, we could do this. And I think there's some really amazing other musicians and poets and sculptors. And for some reason, it attracts tons of creative people. And when yeah. you're with other creative people, it makes you kind of somehow more creative.
Yeah. And you can do music videos riding a motorbike without a helmet on there.
Exactly. For 50 euro.
Yeah. You can do it nowhere else.
Exactly.
Police will stop you and force you into the helmet.
You can use drones, but anywhere, you yeah. know, no one really cares. It's a lot more open and, you know, things are a lot more bendable than they are yeah. in Europe.
I think it must be kind of freeing for the mind to just travel to these other parts of the world and be more than a guest there because you've traveled there so often. Mm-hmm. You're kind of the family, part of the family, I guess. So and it must be interesting because especially nowadays, people in the Western world are really stuck to their ideas. And I think that should really stop because, I mean, you have to get to know other cultures and other countries to be an open-minded person and obviously to be an artist as well. I've learned as well that the song that we've just listened to, The Secret of Letting Go, I've learned that today as well, that you've written the song with Lou, but in separate rooms, mm-hmm. not talking to each other.
Not talking
and to it each worked. Other. That's the beauty of it. But
well, the pre-empty to the story was we were having such a horrible time with each other and like not communicating and not enjoying being together. And so it's like, right, well, let's split up the band. I mean, we split up the band at least twice every album.
Yeah.
And so like, right, that's it. It's all over now. And I'm like, right, well, we've got an hour. So why don't we just do our own thing for an hour? And I don't know whose idea it was actually, but, and then we'll bring these ideas together. But like, you know, God, we really were hating each other. And so she went into the piano room, wrote the lyric. I went into the studio, just came up with the most aggressive bass line I could possibly run past her.
Yeah.
And literally, we did one take of the vocal. She listened to it, sang her vocal.
Wow.
And that was it. That was the song. It was start to finish. The whole thing included mixing in about an hour and a half.
Wow.
Yeah.
That sometimes is a sign for a good song, I guess, when it comes to you, like the muses are talking to you and the song is there all of a sudden.
Yeah.
And I think it's a proof of the theory that diamonds are made under pressure, right? That's what they say. Diamonds are made under pressure. It's when the band is really, when they're like fighting, close to fighting each other, close yeah. to hitting each other's faces.
Yeah.
Then you have to record a song. Maybe.
I mean, actually, Goreski, which is probably our most known song, was done, again, exactly the same way. We were about to break up. We just thought, let's shelve it. She called my beats pedestrian.
Oh, okay.
And I said,
pedestrian, that's...
Pedestrian
beat. Well, that's an insult I've never heard of. Beats are pedestrian.
I mean, you could see it either way, can't you? I mean, but she...
They're not even for bikers. They're pedestrians.
They're not even for pedestrians. They're for snails who walk along. You know, I don't know. And I didn't like the chorus. It was some smolchy, I love you, I love you, I love you. Yeah. And I was just like, no one's going to connect with that chorus. Yeah. And she's like, but that's about my dead grandmother. And then she's like, well, you call my beats pedestrian. Anyway, we were like, okay, I'll change the beat if you change the chorus. Fine. And then the rescue was done. So I think, you know, sometimes it's a pain in the ass, but it's kind of essential for the creativity.
You know, there's forces in the German police that go to demonstrations to de-escalate the situation, right? They're like, They're not in uniform, but you can see that they're police, and they just try to de-escalate the situation before anything bad happens, before protesters start really fighting the police or something like that. And I think you should have the opposite in LAMP, like an escalation officer.
Oh, that's Johnny.
John, would you be my escalation officer, please?
Trust me, they escalate all on their own. They don't need anybody else to help in that process.
Okay.
In fact, I spend a lot of time trying to keep completely out of the way.
Yeah. I get that too. It must be kind of like, it's like your parents fighting, right? You don't want to be in the room when your parents scream at each other.
I'm so used to it now.
Okay.
23, 24 years I've been watching it going on quietly. It's fine.
I mean, I don't think it's quite as obvious as it was before.
No, I mean, there's been patches in their relationship when they've gone extremely well with very little tension. But often when there is tension, something interesting creatively tends to come out of it.
What are you saying, Johnny?
Well, you know, I mean, not all the tracks are as tense as other tracks, are they? Some of them are quite peaceful.
Let's listen to another track before we talk too much. Right now, I've chosen Armageddon Waits because I know that you, John, have contributed for that song.
There's some of my bass on that.
Yeah. Listen to it. The Lamb, Armageddon Waits, of Flux FM. Ah, lovely. Lamb, waren das nochmal? Mit Armageddon Waits auf Flux FM abgespielt. Ein Song, den man durchaus anhört, dass er in Goa oder auf Goa entstanden ist. Da sind schon so ein paar Indian Melody Lines zu hören. Das finde ich ganz schön. We've just established the fact that this is a song that you can feel that it's been made in India, I think. It's just, and you've just told us that street scenes inspire the melody to that song. It's beautiful.
I was walking down to the beach, and you have to walk down this little narrow kind of bridge thingy. And the restaurant was playing, like, everyone plays this kind of mantra in the mornings before they have any business that kind of brings prosperity and business to the place. And it was like a really kind of tinny, kind of like tiny little sound system that was playing it, and the melody idea was kind of inspired from walking that. And I just thought, God, I wonder what would happen if we just put a massive meaty bass line on that.
Yeah.
Because it was like the opposite of that then, because there was no bass on it. It's these tiny speakers. Yeah. And then the whole thing kind of just fell into place from that.
Must be interesting to play that song to the guys in the restaurant, because I bet that they subconsciously kind of realize that it's close to their melody.
Totally, totally. And they're really good friends of mine. In fact, they haven't heard it yet because I haven't been back there since. But when I go next month, I'll definitely bring them a copy.
Yeah, and you're going to play the first show in India ever with Lamb.
I hope so. There's no plans to, but I've got a feeling I mean, both Lou and I love going there. I think definitely in the next year.
Yeah.
We'd like to.
Before you started working on this new record of Lamp, The Secret of Letting Go, you did work as a producer with Bono and U2 and the great U2. You've worked with them on their 2017 album. Songs of a Peak Experience, it's called.
That's correct. Yes.
And I wondered how that inspired you. I think you've met them before. You've done some remix little thingies here and there for them, but this time you kind of co-produced the record. Mm-hmm. And I wondered how inspiring that was. And I've learned that U2 are kind of like using the Hollywood approach when they put out singles, meaning that they write like 10, 12, 15 demos of one and the same song until they really reach the best version of it. Mm. And it reminded me of Hollywood authors who have to rephrase their script like 100 times before it gets into the cinemas.
I mean, sometimes I think one track had 700 versions. 700 versions.
Oh, my God.
And then that goes for, because then there's the lyric changes. And, I mean, Bono is absolutely brilliant. I mean, he is an extremely talented, and like quite often as a producer, you'll say, you know, he'll sing Bongolese, which is utter gibberish.
Yeah.
Like, so he'll be talking about the staircase or the microphone or the coffee he's drinking in his hand, but without you. And then you basically kind of play it back to him.
Yeah.
And he's no idea. He's like the whites of his eyes and everything. He's no idea what he's doing. Pure channeling. But the upshot is that then the narration comes, and then he spends the next sort of few days sort of writing the story. But it never stops. Mm. Right up until mastering. In fact, with or without you, the famous story is that he changed the chorus in the mastering session.
Oh, wow.
And he's like, the master, I've just, have you got the instrumental? Give me a microphone. And they're like, we don't have microphones. It's mastering.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's the legend is that that's how they did it. And there's always a, can we make this better? You know, mm-hmm. let's turn over, you know, Lamb's, I think how it relates to this album, Lamb's approach was always very much like the first idea was the best idea. Cause it had to be, cause that was the idea.
Yeah.
But after working with them, I was like, no, you've got to turn over some stones to see what lives under them. Mm. You know, you find the idea and that could well be the best idea.
Yeah, sure.
But if you don't go digging around sometimes, and with, for example, Armageddon Waits, we had 5, 6, 7 different sets of lyrics for it. And I just kept saying, no, it's not. It's not it. It's not it. Which was driving her up the
sure.
door. I'm not one of your boy bands. I'm not one. I'm not Bono. That really was good for the morale. But actually, with, you know, patience and, you know, it takes longer, but you get a different effect.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I mean, it must be interesting to work like that. But I mean, how happy is one with the status of one's own band when one's looking at those guys? Because there's so many advantages to being in a band like you two. I think... You can choose whatever studio you want to work with. You know, you can get all the producers in the world. You can all get all the guest musicians because you're famous as fuck. Mm. But I think there's so many disadvantages to that. And sometimes when I look at bands like yours or when I look at Elbow, for example, and I look at Elbow and I think they have that sort of fame that I think is the most attractive because they're fans. They love them absolutely. Yeah. A song of them comes in the radio. They gain new fans because it's beautiful music.
Yeah.
But if a guy walks down the streets in Germany, nobody cares.
Bono can't walk anywhere.
Yeah.
I mean, literally anywhere. He can't go on any...
nowhere.
He's just so recognizable. And, I mean... It's a deal that you do, isn't it? When you become a singer, you're like, oh, I don't want to be famous. Get over it. Jesus. But I think when you're in the charts as well, like when you're at like pop music, like in England, it'd be Radio 1 music.
Yeah.
It's a different kind of fame. It's fast and it's up and down.
Yeah.
I mean, not with U2 so much because they've got their own legacy band.
Yeah.
But I think when bands like Elbow have taken years, years and years and years, they've been mates of ours for 20 years.
And yeah, sure.
We were met, they started around the same sort of time as us.
They didn't get any success at all for about 16 years.
Yeah.
And there were times there was a club in Manchester called The Roadhouse. And at one point, the lady that ran that club employed all of them, like, in the coat place, on the door, in the bar, just to keep them going so they could keep writing music. At one point, for about a year, she did that.
Beautiful move, though, but kind of like crazy because, I mean, I've been a fan of Elbow since their first records and I've always thought it's music for the masses, kind of. It should be, but then there's this weird little turn in every song that refuses to go into the charts. Well. And that's there. I know that they do that purposely.
And guys' lyrics aren't children lyrics.
No.
Do you know what I mean? They're adult lyrics, which means that you're never going to sell bucket loads of...
But you've worked with them as well, right?
I have, yes.
Yeah, beautiful band.
Amazing band. What a great band.
Yeah, yeah.
What a great band.
One of the greatest, I think. And sometimes I really think of them in comparison to you two very often because there's a few songs that kind of like... would fill a stadium as well, or go into the same direction, but it's a bit, I don't know what it is. And I want to congratulate Elbow for not having as much success as you two, you know, because I'd rather live their lives than Bono's life.
I think it is a balance, definitely.
Yeah.
I think, you know, like, I think, like, Lamb, the people who come to Lamb crowd, you know, the crowd that we have at Lamb are usually really cool people.
Yeah.
They're usually really open. They're usually very creative themselves. They usually, you know, they're the kind of people that you'd have back and stay at your house for the weekend, you know. Very, very intelligent, beautiful crowds. And obviously, the more poppy you go, the more random the crowds go.
And so
then you get in a position when you're in a big band sometimes where you don't actually like your own crowds.
Yeah.
Which, you know, thankfully we've never had to deal with.
Yeah.
Well, thankfully.
There's a German singer called Sven Regner from Element of Crime, and he just said, like, a few years ago, he said, if it's more than 750 people in your crowd, the assholes are coming too.
Mm.
You know? It's up until 750 people. Mm. It's only cool people, but... When it's more, there got to be some assholes in the crowd or something like that.
We played in Oslo a couple of days ago and, you know, it was this tiny venue and we walked in and go, what the hell are we doing here? Maybe 400 people, maybe.
Yeah.
But it was absolutely brilliant. It was dripping sweat. You know, people, yes. You couldn't have got another person in there, and it was cramped. And actually, that white of your eyes, in terms of, you know, if you ask someone what the best gig they went to in their life, it's very rarely the huge stadium shows, is it? It's that one where Prince played this secret thing and yes, there was only
on the piano,
200
on the,
people in the, or Elton John played the blah, blah, and yeah. there was only 100 people. Yeah. That, you know, that's, I think what, you know, what people soak up as these incredible memories, which maybe is even more powerful, even though it doesn't have the sort of mass sort of appeal.
I mean, there's advantages and disadvantages of being in a super successful band.
Totally.
We've established that, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like a private plane. Why not?
Yeah. No, but in times like these, Greta Thunberg would disagree. It's not the time for private planes anymore, and Bono should get rid of his. It's the one thing. That's my advice to Bono. If you want to stay relevant, get rid of your private plane, man. It's not the time anymore. So thank you for visiting, guys, John and Andy.
Oh, bless you.
Say hi to Lou, then I hope she'll get better before tonight's show.
I'm sure she'll be fine tonight.
Yeah, cool.
For all the listeners listening, worrying, going, oh, is Lou going to make it?
Lou is going to make it.
She's on lockdown. She's been in the sauna. She's going to be fine.
Nice. Und Tickets habe ich auch noch im Angebot. Die kann ich jetzt verlosen unter der 030-2000-9000. Berlin 2000-9000, das ist die Nummer zum Glück. Wir verlosen Tickets für die großartigen Lambe heute Abend im Metropol. Berlin 2000-9000, das ist die Nummer zum Glück. Andy John, thanks again.
Thank you very much.
Bless you.
I hope I'll see you soon. Say hi to Lou and keep up the good work. Bye-bye.
Bless you. Bye.